everybody! It is another beautiful day, and you are listening to Super Gamecast Daily, the number one source for daily video game news. I'm your host, Bronson Fiore, joined by a Mr. Duncan Crabtree.
That's me. I'm Duncan Crabtree.
Hey, yes, so hey, everybody, just so you know, we totally didn't record this on accident, this intro.
Yeah, we definitely didn't get, like, 2 minutes in without realizing that you didn't hit the launch button.
Yes. So, hey, this show is 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Monday to Thursday, and then on Fridays we're at 9 p.m., getting a little weird, doing a late show type deal. But that's not today. Today is the day where we talk about news. It's one of the days where we talk about news. And, Duncan, how do you feel about the news this week?
I feel very newsly about it. The first of the newses that we have been newsed with is this story about Hideki Kamiya revealing via a post that more leads have left Platinum, specifically 5 leads have left Platinum.
Yeah. Can you give us the lowdown? Like, every, you know, like, what's going on with the Exodus, or have any real details come along?
Right. So Kamiya had obviously left Platinum, and that was considered a pretty big deal, and everyone speculated that a lot of the staff would be going with him because he was such a massive force in the company. And 5 high-up members of Platinum had removed any references to Platinum from their social media prior. So this is effectively just a confirmation via Kamiya posting a former directors at Platinum picture to his own social media accounts that showed these guys
already
inadvertently
having a good time
that they aren't there anymore. Now, we don't know if all of them have, in fact, we know for sure that not all of them have gone with Kamiya to his own studio that he's seemingly forming. We know
he has formed, it is Clovers. They're making the new Okami.
Yeah. They've confirmed that the director of Astral Chain, for example, has not moved over to his company and might start his own.
Oh. I was kind of shocked that it was just such a huge amount of people. The Bayonetta Origins, the Bayonetta 3, the Metal Gear Rising, the Anarchy Reigns. Like, yeah. A lot of dudes left. Like, Kamiya came out and said, games are made by people. Wherever they go from here, they'll create great things that only they can. Please look forward to their work. In one of the most,
yeah, it's the nature of the thing, right? You get a really influential figure that leaves a major company like this, and 3 new studios sprout up from the ashes, and that's the cycle, I feel, of the games industry.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious what's going on at Platinum to where this happened. Like, I felt Bayonetta 3 was successful enough, and Cerais and the Lost Demon was a great game, and they're working on that new Ninja Gaiden, so. Kind of wondering what's going on there.
I think a giant bomb of a live service game is what's going on there.
Do you think a live service game, like the investors and the owners were like, make of the live service?
No, they did launch a live service game to nil players.
What? Yeah. What was it?
It shut down within a month. I can't even remember the title of it. Babylon's Fall.
Oh, they were holy shit, okay.
Yeah, and that's was just a massive flop, and no one was happy with it. They kind of realized that, they don't really have a lot of experience in the live service field, and it seemingly caused a lot of internal issues that led to a lot of this fracturing, because there was evidently a lot of pushing and meddling for, like, hey, you guys need to do things that you're not used to doing. With Babylon's Fall, probably caused a lot of the issues that led to Kamiya leaving in the first place. And then with Kamiya leaving, he was obviously a big glue force on the company that kept everyone together.
I mean, yeah, like, I think that's pretty obvious, you know, like, he was the rock for them, you know, like, yeah. he I mean, he formed the studio, right? Like, that was his deal.
Yeah.
So... You know, I'm that's...
Which itself was formed when Kamiya was dissatisfied with his prior studio and had to leave and make his own studio. So he's just doing it again.
Just every 15 years, a Kamiya must go into the wild and form his own studio.
Well, I feel they have this cycle where they make fantastic games that don't make quite enough money, and then they're kind of guns for hire for a period of time, and they make other companies a lot of money, and they stay alive, and they're like, we just got to do this to stay alive, and then they get too much outside investment, too much influence that is dissatisfactory for them, and then they leave and make another studio.
It is wild the amount of times throughout the years I have heard the words, hey, Platinum Games is having money problems again. You know, like, they need to help a studio on blank. Which, I mean, like...
We got a lot of great games out of it.
Yeah, that Transformers game was sick. Nier was great. You know, I'm going to take a guess and say because they were already in the middle of working on it, this Ninja Gaiden is great. Like, it'll probably be pretty good, would be my assumption. But, yeah, man.
There's plenty of talent left over at Platinum to at least finish what they're doing.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Interesting enough, you know, they have a quote from when he left. If I was satisfied at Platinum, then I wouldn't have left, he said. There's a way I believe games should be made, a philosophy and mindset of how games should be made. Koyama approached me and we shared the same mindset and philosophy about game development. Kamiya told VGC that the most of Clover's staff so far followed him from Platinum, including co-founder and Project GG designer Kento Koyama. Although Clovers hasn't named specific people, some notable faces appeared in team photo, such as cinematic director Kunihiko Tsusada. Jesus Christ. All right, who worked on the cutscenes for the original Okami, Devil May Cry, Bayonetta, and Astral Chain, Metal Gear Rising's lead animator, and there's the Bayonetta series animator as well. Clover told VGC Takuchi is currently not working with the new company, though he has left Platinum.
Is this not the exact same process that birthed Clover in the first place, that the name is obviously a reference to, that, you know, Kamiya was dissatisfied in Capcom, so he left Capcom and they founded Clover, and then Kamiya was dissatisfied in Clover, so he left Clover and he founded Platinum, and now he's dissatisfied in Platinum, so he's leaving Platinum to found Clovers.
That's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. I that is the process, but it's just like, man, have we not learned anything in 25 years or 20 years?
No, we will never learn anything in any number of years.
Like, do not throw money at Platinum in a big way because they are not that studio. They make niche titles for dorks like me.
To be fair, they've been making money for other studios.
I mean, yes.
Babylon's Fall happened. And they lost a lot of money for another studio.
I mean, yes, but I feel like a lot of stuff they've worked on are, like, known or known-ish IP. Like Nier and Metal Gear Rising and Transformers. And also, they did have a bomb in there. Like, they worked on that Star Fox Zero game, which was not good.
They also made one for 101, infamously, which made $0.
Yeah, that's a shame, because that game is awesome. That game is really cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bummer. I don't know, man.
But this is the way of things. This is how the world goes, all right? We get one studio that dies, three studios pop up, two of those studios die, and we get one cool studio for a while until it dies and it makes three new studios, and then one of those studios is going to survive. That's how we've gotten, like, every video game studio for the past, like, 15 years.
Yeah, but when you put it that way, it makes me sad. When you put it that way, it makes me super duper sad. Well, I wish Kamiya the best. I think Okami 2 is going to be awesome. I'm sure these other guys will make great games. And I do think that there are probably enough people at Platinum where that Ninja Gaiden 4 will be really good.
Well, I don't think Platinum is going to be particularly bad even with losing this really large amount of very experienced talent. I think that kind of the process that makes these studios involves just training up a lot of talent. So yep. the people that are still at Platinum are likely talented professionals still.
Yes.
They're evidently losing a lot of their production power, but I don't think it's a death for the studio instantaneously. I think they'll limp along for quite a while, and then everyone that works there now will eventually find better jobs at other studios, and then Platinum will be silently shut down.
That's almost worse. That's almost worse. Thank you. All right, on to the next news story, which isn't nearly as depressing. So, hey, the Switch 2. That's coming soon. And, as any piece of new technology, it is going to be scalped into the ground. If you want a Switch 2 at launch, you better be able to be willing to stab somebody in a line. Yeah.
But they're making preparations.
Ho-ho, they are. The Nintendo Ninjas, they're gonna come and get you. So... he says they're making preparations for Switch 2 resellers. Shuntaro Furukawa says Nintendo will put measures in place to prevent Switch 2 scalpers. Speaking to the Japanese press for the first time since Switch 2 announcement, he was asked how Nintendo plans to ensure smooth launch for the console, especially considering the original Switch history of stock shortages, which were often exacerbated by those seeking to resell the console. He has said they have made preparations based on past experience and plan to prepare enough Switch 2 inventory to meet demand. Saying, quote, "We will take all possible measures based on the experience we have accumulated to date. We are making preparations."
So this feels like, to me,
mm-hmm.
the Wii U launch, if the Wii U didn't nuclear bomb Nintendo. Right? Because
yes,
I think that what they effectively mean by that is not that they're going to put any special system in place to prevent scalpers from buying anything, because it's kind of too large and wide a release for you to effectively do that. I think he means we're going to be selling a bajillion Switches as fast as humanly possible.
You think it's just we're going to have all the inventory. We are going to have so much inventory, you won't be able to scalp it.
Which is insanely dangerous, because that's the issue with the Wii U, is that they thought it was going to go awesome and great, and then they had a lot of Wii U's that didn't get sold. And so it's a dangerous move, but it is the only effective way to deal with scalpers with such a massive release, right? Is just have a lot of them to sell.
So I think that stocking the Switch 2 like that is fine. I think that system's going to do great. Pretty much everyone I know who has a Switch is super stoked for it and excited for it. I think where it like, and they even said priority was given to ensure initial inventory of the successor console and a lineup of software titles at the time of its launch. Even though they had planned to launch it in late 2024. So what that tells me is like, hey, we delayed the launch by like half a year to make sure, everything is all right. You know, like that's what's going on there.
And I think it's really just effectively access to the chips required to make the level of stock that they actually want for a launch.
Yeah.
Because given the amount of leaked that this console is, it's evidently mm-hmm. been ready for a while. Mm-hmm. And it's just about actually making the amount of Switches that they want to have for launch time.
Which they've said they expect 20 million first year. Like, that's what they've been saying.
Yeah, and I think that's super reasonable. It's a crazy number of consoles. I also think it'll totally happen.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that happening. Like, I think that 20 million is by no means unrealistic for Nintendo to do.
Do we have a price tag yet for what they're launching Switch to at? I don't
Nope.
believe we do.
Nope.
I think if this sells at 420 million easy,
oh yeah,
like
cruising,
no problem.
Like I know that
500, maybe. I think 20 million could still happen at 500. It's gonna be harder though.
There are people like myself who bought a Steam Deck just because they were like tired, like they were tired of waiting for Switch 2. So
if it's
I
350. Blows it out of the water.
Oh yeah,
20 million is an understatement.
Yeah, like I completely agree with that. Is like that would be my guess. Is like 20 million. I think it's gonna be 400. I know the leaks have been putting it somewhere between 350 and 450. I think in any of those prices, it hits 20 million, no problem. Especially it's because it's launching with a new Mario Kart. Like that's gonna be big. It's gonna be huge. So yeah. You know, I would love if they put real preparations in place beyond having a ton of inventory. I know, last year they did a thing in, Japan for the PS5 Pro where you could only pre-order it, the special edition ones, if you had a PSN account of a certain age.
Japan loves lottery systems. There is a massive prevalence of lottery systems in Japan, so that's no surprise at all. It's their go-to method of managing limited stock releases.
Like I've had a Nintendo account, like their online website account, which merged into their online service since like the early 2000s. So I'm just like, please, please make it by age of account, please.
Right.
Give me the most priority.
Though I think that goes well into our next story.
It does.
Nintendo Switch 2 waiting in the wings, sales of the original Switch and its games continue to tumble.
So, yes, yes. As people get tired and people realize Switch 2 is coming, it has revised its hardware forecast down, yet as sales of Switch and its games continue to be, quote, below expectations. Nintendo dedicated game console business decreased by 31% year-on-year, and then following a significant decline in sales of both the Switch and its software. Their mobile and IP-related income decreased by 33%, though a lot of people attribute that to not having a Mario movie this year. As a result, gross profit went down 27% year-on-year. They revised their financial forecast ending in, for the fiscal year ending in March, by bringing it down from $1.5 million from 11 or by 10 million to 150 million. Given that the Switch is its eighth year, this is normal, right? Like this is, you know, they're
in
over
fact, the numbers are crazy high for an eighth year of a console.
Right, like, and like, I have heard people, like, buying Switches this year, which is madness, you know?
Yeah, I have too. And I think that the part of the story that's kind of hard to parse is that they're saying that it didn't meet expectations and then giving the actual numbers of how much it dropped. There was an obvious expectation that there would be a drop. It's just that this drop is obviously larger than they initially expected, which is why the adjustment that they're making isn't an adjustment of, you know, of a 30%, even though that's roughly how much year over year they've decreased in sales. It's by 10 million to 150 million, obviously implying that it is from 160 million, which is actually a far less meaningful proportion of expected profits that they're toning down, which means they probably missed their marks by, we're talking 4 to 5%.
And the real crazy part here is, like, once again, that is in the eighth year of the system, right? That's like in the eighth year where everyone has one of these things. Like, this is the third best selling game console of all time, and by the time it's done,
I think this is probably a consequence of them overestimating the demand for the Switch because of its unexpected positive performance year on year in the past 7 years.
Yeah, probably. I would guess that. You know, you think, like, man, the party's just going to keep going. It's gone for 7 years straight.
That's what the 3DS did. They wouldn't be wrong to expect it because the 3DS did exactly that. It was constantly successful its entire lifespan.
Yeah, and I mean that's kind of what happened with the with the Wii as well. Like the Wii was successful till the last year, like straight up until the very last year. Like, you know, and it's not like they didn't have games last year, right? Like they had a new Zelda come out, they had a new Mario Party, they had a remake of a Paper Mario game. Like, they had a pretty solid year. It's just it, you know.
I think that the big difference that the Switch has in comparison to their previous consoles with, like, the 3DS and with things like the Wii is that there's, like, a lot less potential for customizability than those consoles had. I know the big reason the 3DS was successful was because you can brand and wrap and make different, you know, special editions of that console, like, so easily. It, you know, it's a console with a shell. People in the aftermarket after the end of the 3DS's life cycle are still selling, you know, second market shells for those consoles for customization. They're and the Wii as well, it's a console that you can make a million different variations from, and people will buy them just for collecting purposes. And I think the Switch doesn't hit that market.
No, the Switch is, you can swap Joy-Cons, you can swap the dock.
Like, and people buy Joy-Cons often, but you can't do anything other than Joy-Cons and dock, and that's not a whole $400 console.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, even then it's like, well, it's, like, I feel like everyone who has a Switch or wants a Switch has one. It is the third best-selling console of all time.
I mean, that's why the Switch 2 is coming out, right? Is that everybody who wants a Switch has a Switch, so we gotta renew that market.
Yes, and they probably will. Like, everyone I know who has one of those things, or almost everyone I know, is like, yeah, I would love another one of these with new games that's more powerful.
Yeah, I will probably buy a Switch, too. Like,
yeah.
Especially like my Switch.
Especially if those rumors that were floating around of, yo, dog, the games with unlocked frame rate, that will go up.
Yeah.
You know, play your Tears of the Kingdom at a locked, you know, 60. Be cool. So.
Though, I think, and I'll segue into our next story, because I think it's particularly relevant to what I want to say here, is that Nintendo said that it will continue support after the Switch 2's launch for the Switch. That is, I think, really relevant to the games that are going to come out for the Switch 2 throughout its whole life cycle, because those games are still going to need to work on the Switch.
I think some of them will. I think this is going to be kind of the transition you saw with PS4 to PS5, but probably even quicker, which is like, Metroid Prime 4 will be on both. Pokemon ZA will be on both. Do not expect Mario Kart or Mario to be on both. Don't expect it.
I think, honestly, I kind of do. I kind of do expect it. I think we're going to have like a 1 or 2 year period where anything that's coming out for the Switch 2 is going to be compatible with the Switch, and that we are effectively going to have the Switch 2 be like a performance box because of just how huge of a market on the Switch there currently is.
I don't. I think third parties and indies will still make games for Switch 1, but I think Nintendo itself has almost never done that, like, that dance. I don't see that. And they are very resistant to change.
Resistant to change. It's just so much of the way the market is working right now that I feel that they may finally choose to take a play from the Microsoft and Sony book and keep the Switch 1 running for like a big part of the life cycle of the Switch 2.
Yeah, see, I don't. I think that knowing Nintendo and the way they've worked for the past, basically my entire life of observing them, is they're going to be like, yeah, we're going to put Metroid Prime on both because we said we would. Pokemon ZA will be both because that's all the money in the world. But otherwise, nah, buy a Switch 2. Suck it up. Especially if they're planning to put out 20 million in year one.
It is a lot to sell in year one. But you gotta understand, though, the Switch 1 is the best-selling console of all time.
Well, it's the third best-selling console, and it's the best Nintendo
selling. It's the best Nintendo-selling console of all time. Yeah. And that is just a huge existing player base for game releases.
That did not stop them with the Wii, man.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, and it was a massive financial failure. The Wii U was devastating. And I think that that's what might persuade them to continue support for the Switch 1 for a big part of the life cycle of the Switch 2 is that they might feel that not having a gradual transition is part of the issue that they had with the Wii U. And I think that's true. I think that that is part of the issue that they had with the Wii U. There wasn't enough new and interesting titles for people to want to get a Wii U over a Wii. The swap to a whole new console made it so that those titles became less attractive. I mean, how many people do you know that really played Smash 4?
I mean, I played it a lot on the 3DS.
Exactly.
I owned a Wii U also. It was just easier for me to play it with friends that way.
But everybody had a 3DS.
Yeah, that was an 80 million selling unit console. I just think that knowing Nintendo and the way they want to push you to the new hardware and lock you in, like, I cannot picture them not locking out Switch 1. I just can't picture it in my mind.
Will the dinosaurs win? The real question is, will the dinosaurs at Nintendo talk down the business guys who want the money and go, no, we're going to make this silly decision?
We'll see. I'm actually really tired of these long tails on generations, though. So I really hope the dinosaurs do win. I really hope they do. Like, I am so tired of...
how I feel about it.
I get that it's, like, pro-consumer of, like, yeah, you get to keep your device for another year or two, but a lot of the time that, like, you'll play Resident Evil 4 on a base PS4, and it's, like, looks like I'm playing it with a blur filter at 28 FPS, and you're like, never mind. Please don't do this. You know, and I already think, like, the Switch 1 is at the max potential it has ever been at. Like, you look at Tears of the...
There's no new market for the Switch 1 coming.
I don't... Also, it's, like, 150 million people. Like, I don't see, you know, people hopping on the bandwagon now. But you never know.
The thing about this is that, and part of the story here is, similar to all their previous consoles, they're going to be continuing support of the Switch 1, which means that they're going to be, like, making Switch 1s for a good part of the Switch 2's life cycle. They're going to be selling brand new units of that still.
Yeah. I also think they're going to drop price on it drastically, though.
Absolutely.
I think they're going to be like, yo, do you want a Switch Lite? $120. You want a regular Switch? $200. Yeah. You want a Switch OLED? $300. You know?
I think they're going to try and replicate what they did with the 3DS, and that they're going to try and make it so that this tail end is cheap consoles that are popular because they're affordable and have a giant library on them.
Yeah, I could totally picture them doing like a $120 Switch Lite. You know,
absolutely.
Here's a $200 Switch Original, and we're getting rid of the OLED because if you want something like that, you probably are buying the Switch 2. Yeah. So yeah,
I OLED's dead in the water. That thing's like basically gone.
Yeah, that like it's the one I have, but it's also like I bought it at launch, or like a week after. So
yeah, I don't think anyone is in the future going to be like, you know what, I want an OLED a year and a half into the Switch 2 release.
Yeah, that thing's done. But I could totally picture them being like, here's your $120 Pokemon Switch Lite. Go nuts.
And that's part of my issue, and part of why I think I do kind of hope for that long tail end. Because as much as I think I will get a Switch 2, it's kind of just a Pokemon and Mario machine for me, right? And like Zelda games. And there is a meaningful period of time where there's not going to be a lot of those that exist. And it would be nice for me to be able to play like one or two of those releases on my Switch 1 until there's a big enough library for me to be like, all right, time for the Switch 2.
But like, I guess here's my question for you and for the people who are probably the people who want to watch this kind of content is, do you really want to play like Mario Odyssey 2 at like 25 FPS? Do you know, really?
I've spent a lot of my life sitting in the muck and the garbage.
All right.
Of low frame rates on consoles with games that barely work.
I mean, I have two. I owned a 360, my guy.
Exactly. So,
but I've been freed of the chains.
I could stand it for a little while. I have a nice PC now. All right. Nowadays, I've gotten a little more sensitive about it, but that's still in me. And I think that gives me a bit of a buffer of time that I could deal with that.
You have nothing to lose but your chains, sir. That's all I'm saying.
Right. These are comfortable chains. I've had them for so long.
I don't know. I would love for them to just cut it off cleanly. Like, I think it would have been a lot more beneficial to both Sony and Xbox to do that as well. But Sony and Xbox just didn't have the supply because of COVID. They
I don't know
have...
if I agree financially speaking, though. I think that this period of gradual shift is good for them for retaining players using their marketplace perspective.
Yeah.
You know, a sale on an Xbox One and a sale on an Xbox One X make them the same amount of money.
I mean, they make them a little more money on the... you know, on the older units, arguably, just because the parts are easy to get back then. But I also think, like, you have to think of the future of your ecosystem. It's like, these console bridges are good times to step off, you know? Yeah. And I realize that, hey, it would be a good idea to, I don't know, like, maybe ease them in a little bit. But I also think of, like, it's also, if you don't get them onto the next system as soon as possible, that's also good opportunities for them to look at, like, maybe I should get a Steam Deck instead. Maybe I should get a, you know, an Ally.
They care so much more about sales on their marketplace than they did in the past. I mean, it's a big part of the motivation as to why Microsoft is, like, trying to get off of the buy-the-box competition.
Yeah.
Is that they want you to be buying their games on PC in the Microsoft Store. They want you to use Game Pass. That's really what matters more. The Xbox is their Game Pass machine.
Yes, and that's... Yeah, that's apparent
that's
by
more,
the...
That's more profitable.
Yeah, it's, you know, they get 30% of every game that everyone else makes, plus 100% of their own.
Yeah, and the tail end does that. It gives them more time where people who might not have jumped immediately into the next generation are still making purchases of those current gen games because they want to play them and they're not particularly bothered by low frame rate.
But it also gives them a chance to linger more and look at, hey, that PS5 is there. Hey, that Switch 2 is there. If we're using Microsoft as an example, you know, like I, you know, I'm the person who buys everything, but like part of the reason that I got a deck is like, I was tired of playing indie games or games that I'd like to play handheld and having them be in full potato mode, you know, like playing, you know, and I think that the, you know, that I think that especially Nintendo being as old school as they are, they will probably do a cutoff. I just do not, like I said, I think some titles that they've already promised to Switch One will be there, Pokemon ZA and, Metroid Prime being the two, but like, dude, if they came out and said Mario Kart's on both, I'd be like, oh, cool. Way to kneecap yourself, dog.
Yeah, we're gonna see a couple Breath of the Wilds, I think, where, you know, Breath of the Wild wasn't a Switch game.
It was a Wii U. Yeah.
Yeah, so like, it released for both because they're like, alright, we promised that you're gonna get Breath of the Wild on the Wii U, so here's your Breath of the Wild on the Wii U, but this is a game for the Nintendo Switch. And never played it on the Switch.
Yeah, I think Metroid Prime 4 is that game. Like, I don't think Mario Odyssey was only on Switch, and I think Mario Kart will only be on Switch 2. But, you know.
Well, we will see. We will see.
Anyway, let's get to our next news story here.
Yes. Kingdom Come Deliverance 2.
Yes.
They're being accused of the woke, and they don't like it.
I thought it was the opposite. I thought they were being accused of the not woke, and they were
No,
tired.
no. They are now being accused of the woke. Quite
Okay,
infamously,
can
Kingdom
you give
Come
me the full
Deliverance
rundown
1.
on what the hell happened here?
Yeah. So this goes back to Kingdom Come Deliverance 1. All right, Kingdom Come Deliverance 1 got into a controversy because it doesn't have a lot of people of color in the game. And they were initially claiming that that was for historical purposes, saying that that region of the world just didn't have many people of color, and that's why there weren't a lot of people of color in the game. They were obsessed with the history of the region. Now, that's maybe not actually historically accurate, and there was a very interesting conversation going on at the time about how actually there were quite a few more people of color in the region during that period of history than maybe they might think. And they were accused of being kind of racist because of that at the time. And there was a massive like group of people that came to their defense in saying that, yeah, well, you just can't handle games that are based and are super for real about race. Don't you know that only the whites were in this region? Stop trying to put your woke in my video games. And that was a whole part of the controversy surrounding Kingdom Come Deliverance 1. The reverse has now happened. Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 is taking place in a region of that same country that is much more diverse during that period of time because it was more of a population hub than the area that Kingdom Come Deliverance 1 took place in. And so there are characters that are people of color in places in the game, and there is there's an optional gay romance in the game, and so people have latched onto this and said they've wokeified Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, and they've taken the complete reverse stance that they did on the company during the first game's life cycle. And they're just tired of it.
I would be too, because I, as someone on the outside of all of this shit as well, I'm tired of hearing about it. I'm tired of every time a game comes out, it being framed by weirdos on the internet as woke or not woke. I'm so
Yeah.
tired. And I remember a conversation where someone was like, "Is this forever now?" And I'm like, yeah,
It
this is
is.
probably forever. This is gonna be the stupid discussion we have to have every time this rolls around. Quotes that the developer says, "I think generally in Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, with the research we did, we delved way deeper into different characteristics. This goes for the Cumans, who are no longer one-note villains, to individual characters like Father Godwin, who have been elevated beyond his original status as a funny, boozed-up priest. Warhorse wants to dig into Bohemia's denizens, their motivations, and history. The result is a game that feels much richer, telling stories shaped by different perspectives. That it's upsetting that the bigots is merely a bonus," says this article from PC Gamer. But for Warhorse, which is now being accused of being a part of some global DEI conspiracy, it's understandably exhausting, saying, quote, "In an ideal world, we would not be connected to these fights at all."
Yeah.
That's the thing, I'm just tired of it. Like it and the thing is like they're never consistent with their ideology. I remember you and I you were on that podcast episode last year where we went over the woke game detector list.
The woke games list. Which
Yeah.
games are woke?
And it's like every game to them is woke, like no matter what. And like they're telling you shouldn't play these, or like it's like or you'll have cases where people will be like, yeah, it's totally, not woke, like metaphor. They'll say metaphor is not woke, and I'm like, bruh, this entire story is about like
This
racism.
game about racism, that is like the entire point of the game. The thing is that this is all a consequence of a larger symptom that the game industry has undergone since probably around 2016, when people realized that there is a lot of room for political radicalization amongst people who like games. And so because that was kind of proven to be the case, there's a big market out there for people who want to radicalize people who play games more. And there's an entire ecosystem surrounding people complaining about wokeness in games and complaining about the potential drift of games to be radicalized by leftist politics. And because that ecosystem exists, all games now are vulnerable to being dragged into this existing conversation. And there's nothing we can do about it, you know? The people are here to complain about woke, and they're not going to be stopped.
Just every single time this conversation comes up, I just feel like the Ben Affleck smoking a cigarette meme. Like, I'm going to pull it up on the screen for everyone in a second. Like, this is what, it's exactly what I feel like every time this conversation comes up. Just tired and like I want to die. You know?
Yeah, you know, look, we have to hunt down the wokes. They're in the games. We go, we find them. And if there aren't any wokes, that just means we're not looking hard enough for the wokes. And you know, we gotta look harder. Because the less woke the game seems, the more the secret DEI is in there more secretly.
I'm so concerned someone who watches this is going to take you seriously. Like, that's the number one thing that came to my brain when you were saying all that. Okay, so yeah, man, I just, like, and I'm just, like, mad they're also inconsistent. Like, Baldur's Gate 3 did not get nearly as much flack, but it's, like, by what I've heard about woke or anti-woke, it's one of the most woke games of all time.
It did actually get a lot of flack, but the target audience for Baldur's Gate 3 was never the same target audience as the people that are complaining about the woke. You know, they were going after D&D players, and D&D is a very progressive community. And a lot of people that don't play a lot of games in the larger sphere played Baldur's Gate 3 because, you know, it's a D&D thing. And the game's great. And so I think it was just not as loud, but I mean, it's on the woke games list. It's certified woke.
I mean, yes. Or like Cyberpunk. Like Cyberpunk, they didn't do the woke dance. And that happened. I don't remember hearing that conversation.
Well, and that's because CD Projekt Red is, you know, they made The Witcher, and they loved The Witcher.
Ah, but, oh man, look at The Witcher 4 conversation regarding Ciri.
That's woke. That's woke because woman. Woman present, so woke.
Why is Metaphor not woke? Why is Metaphor not woke?
Well, you know, it because elf woman.
Got it. Got it. Elf woman is okay.
Yeah, elf woman, they like elf lady.
Mm-hmm.
Kingdom Come Deliverance, though, is particularly interesting because it's actually intersecting with two groups that have this issue. Video games have had this issue for a long time, but if you're really into history, you would know that history also has a huge issue with a population of people who are, like, obsessively screaming about historical revisionism of people who are like, no, you're making it woke. You're wokeifying history by saying things that weren't true. Because there's a, you know, when people take a modern look at history, they have a lot more progressive takes on what may or may not have been happening at a given period of time, and they consider evidence that people in the sphere may not have previously considered. Kingdom Come Deliverance is a big history people game. And so that community is kind of where the discussion around Kingdom Come Deliverance 1 started, is that there was a bunch of people coming from these big history buff communities going, actually, no, it was mostly white people in the region. And then other people coming and going, actually, it was, there's probably not all white people And there was a secondary history controversy going on around Kingdom Come Deliverance 1. And that's effectively what's happening again, but it's bringing in a bunch of other people that don't have that context.
Fair. All right. Fair enough. We're gonna continue to report on news stories like this, and every time I'm gonna continue to be the most tired man in the room.
Yeah, I find it funny at this point. I take great entertainment.
Just like Wooly and Castlevania. It's like, is this forever now? This is forever now.
It is
This is
forever now.
just,
This
yep.
is how things are. And you know what? It's only gonna get more.
God damn it. All
One day
right.
Metaphor will be woke for having elves. Elf racism is coming.
The elf. All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, speaking of games that its community constantly hates it and it receives a bunch of backlash, sometimes justified, sometimes not justified, Destiny 2.
Destiny 2.
Destiny 2 Heresy is missing some voiced dialogue due to the SAG-AFTRA strike. Certain voice lines in
Yeah.
Destiny 2 will be silent in-game with subtitles enabled by default. With this being our final epilogue entry for the Light and Darkness saga, our teams have been taking great care to deliver delightful narrative beats and story content for players to enjoy. Due to the ongoing SAG-AFTRA strike, you may notice certain voice lines being silent in-game. However, we have enabled subtitles by default for this release to ensure players do not miss any narrative content. Within your gameplay settings, we offer a variety of customizable options for subtitles to begin help with accessibility and general visibility of narrative content. You can change size, color, background, all that garbage. Actors. So, Actors Union SAG-AFTRA started a strike last July after it had failed to negotiate acceptable protections around the use of AI. It means video game companies and their performers' production arms, with the exception of those who have already signed agreements with SAG-AFTRA, likely won't be able to hire unionized actors to perform motion capture or voice work for the games. Black Ops 6 developer and publisher Activision recently confirmed it had recast several characters in the game's zombie mode due to ongoing SAG-AFTRA strike. Star Wars themed gear and accessories are also coming to Destiny 2.
So obviously the big thing here is the AI. That's like the big part of the agreement that
Yeah,
has been the problem
that's
with
what's halting this in
SAG-AFTRA,
general.
because Destiny, among many other games, would really, really like to be able to use AI to fill in missing voice lines
I'm
for
sure they
periods
would.
of time
I'm sure that a
where
lot of
they.
movies and televisions would, or TV shows would. I am sure that they would. But my response to that is fuck them.
Yeah, no, it's super messed up. And understandably, SAG-AFTRA has not been cool with that, and so they've continually had the strike for quite a while now, in negotiations with trying to get protections against their voices being turned into AI. Some people have just had it happen to them anyways, which is a whole can of worms in and of itself. And basically, to just protect their jobs, they kind of have to keep going, and that's been going for so long that now content is coming out where it's like, yeah, we didn't record this ahead of time, and Destiny's one of those.
I just wonder if Destiny 2 could have signed in a separate agreement being like, yo dog, yeah, we won't use AI, but I'm guessing that like the money men at the company would be like, the fuck what? We're not gonna agree to
I mean,
that.
yeah, you're dealing with like Sony now. Like, they're definitely not going to agree to that. And beyond that, Destiny has had a history of problems with their voice actors. Infamously, in Destiny 1, they had Peter Dinklage as the ghost, and Dinkle Ghost didn't work out because he's, as it turns out, pretty expensive and not known for voice acting. And so they had to replace him with Nolan North. Who I imagine is less expensive and definitely more familiar with voice acting. I wonder if Nolan North is probably one of the characters that we're not going to be hearing dialogue from
Oh, I would
is
bet.
probably going to be more silent in this bit of Destiny content. It feels like this is something that they're going to go back and record later,
I see
so
it.
that when you're going through the content after the strike, they can have voices. But they're kind of just shit out of luck right now. They just gotta
Yeah.
they gotta keep chugging along. It's live service. They can't delay like content releases for the game because then nothing will be in the game.
I mean, this is Destiny. They already have big enough content droughts without the help.
Yeah,
So.
they've already got the content droughts, let alone if they had to wait another 6 months for union negotiations to go on.
Yep.
It's
Ooh.
and it's really it's kind of good for the strike in that, that this is the thing they've been threatening. They're effectively saying, agree to our terms or you're going to be releasing content without voice acting. And now some of the content is releasing without voice acting, and they're going to feel the consequences of that.
I mean, that part's good, and I hope it gets negotiated, and I hope the answer is, hey, no AI for these actors. That's what my hope
Yeah, well,
is.
and the main thing isn't even just no AI. Certainly they don't prefer to be using AI, but they just need protections against coming in, recording a certain series of lines, then they convert your voice into AI and they don't pay you for any of the other lines that have your voice in the game. What they need is they need to get the same pay rate whether they decide to use AI or not. Because some actors obviously don't want AI being used for their voice at all, but I think that that's just never going to happen. Companies aren't going to agree to it. I think the overall goal is to just not take work away from people. And so they're going to need to pay them whether they use an AI voice or their real voice.
No, fair enough. What a time we live in, man. What a
Yeah,
time.
technology, it moves, it shakes things, it changes the very foundation of how we do our business, especially the business of video
I
games.
know, like it's the amount of stuff you keep hearing coming out about AI for games and otherwise just seems like absolute madness. Like it's happening all the time.
Yeah. I just want the AI I want in video games is that guy making an AI for Trackmania that is just playing over and over and over again until it gets better and better at doing things, and getting like crazy runs of Trackmania going. That's the kind of AI I want to see.
I have heard stories about that. Like I've heard like people are like having AIs just run games over and over and over and like trying to 100% Mario with an AI. And I'm
I
like,
want a
this is
training
nuts.
mode in a fighting game that sets me up against an AI that's wacky good and it's going to exploit all of my flaws until I fix them.
I would love that. I actually was like, that was kind of what they were doing with the Tekken system, where like it'll map how you play, but it's not nearly how someone plays. Like it's a nice idea, but like I would love that idea if it was just like, oh yeah, we read this dude's data and we've recreated him as best we can. You can now play Daigo in Street Fighter, whatever. Or an approximation of Daigo.
I guess player ghosts, AI player ghosts is interesting.
Yeah, but I want the
But
ghost to
it's
actually be better, like to be better at the game than the current ghosts.
exactly. That's what I mean is that, is just being able to play with other people without playing with other people. That and just live
Truly, the
commentary system.
cyberpunk nightmare we live in is what you just said.
Exactly. But I think that the real future of AI in video games is live commentary systems in game, where it maps your Tekken gameplay and tells you what you're doing wrong and it writes you a list of how you're bad and why you're bad and how you should stop being
Yeah,
bad.
that they just started that with Tekken like this past year, where it's just like you can watch replays and they tell you should have done this here, you should have done this here. and they're not always right or perfect, but it's like this is the start, and I'm looking forward to in 10 years when you play Street Fighter 7 or Tekken 9, and it's like, oh yeah, this game can predict, tell you exactly what you did wrong in almost every conceivable way.
And the thing is that that is AI implementation. Like,
Yeah,
Tekken
absolutely.
has effectively AI
Yes.
implementation. It's just, not the name we use for it. It's, we don't
Yeah.
talk about it like that. The good stuff that will be implemented with AI is gonna not be called AI implementation because that word as a buzzword will have died out by the time the technology is
Yeah.
good enough to really do good things. And we're gonna be getting just, oh, a new live commentary feature, a new gameplay analysis feature, and it's gonna be, low key of an AI model.
All right, well, anyway, hey, that's our show. That's
That is our show.
that is our show. So a couple things to go over here. Hey, you can find us on Twitter, Blue Sky, Facebook, YouTube. You should, if you're watching this live or getting this in the RSS feed, YouTube is where we are and where you should
Yep.
be watching. We do clips of this show every day if just 1 hour is a little too long for you. And if you do like watching this live every day, 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Monday to Thursday, then Fridays at 9 p.m., our little late show where we get a little weird. And thank you guys for watching, and you have yourself a wonderful night, and we love you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.